Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody, welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here with Brent Labrada, and this is Season 3, Episode 4, Understanding Systems in Dog Training. And this is going to be exciting because we want to go over what is a training system? What does that mean, right? We want to talk about why it's important to understand them, how to practice and learn them, as well as common mistakes that new trainers make in the pursuit of learning and understanding new training systems. We're super excited for this topic. It'll be a little dense, but I think we can break it down well. And with that, over to you, man.
What's up, guys? It's Brent. Yes, today we are talking about dog training systems. And I think this is really important because most of the time in modern days, a lot of people are learning through online content, right? And very rarely do people actually see the complete system from beginning to end. Normally, we are being fed clips of techniques within systems. And that's just something to really, really understand, guys, that there are going to be certain steps, techniques, ideas that belong to a greater system of achievement, right? Like a step A through Z, but usually online we're only seeing steps G and F and K and I, and we're making judgment calls without actually understanding the complete system. So today let's talk a little bit about what is a dog training system, okay? So the way we've defined it so far, a dog training system is a series of actionable steps used to achieve desired outcomes within a respective ethos, right? Or methodology, like a belief system, if you will. This ethos sets boundaries and limitations on what methods will and won't be allowed, right? So, you know, the ethos could be, a moral stance, an ideal stance, but ultimately there's an objective at the end, like a goal. I'm doing it this way for this common result. Okay. Systems also have guiding rules and principles that serve as guidelines for those steps. And then systems also create contingencies for common setbacks, right? So we know in any dog training system, there's going to be some trade-offs that we have, right? And a good system, a self-aware system, a complete system, should have contingency plans for if I have this type of dog behaving this way, well, then I pivot and I do this thing, right? And these types of contingencies are probably one of the most important part of dog training, because you could be within a system, train 10 dogs, and potentially get 10 different experiences, right? And the cool part is, how do you stay within a system and learn these little pivots and these contingencies to change accordingly to the behavior or the emotional state of the dog? And that's like where the real experience comes in my opinion, right? Learning a system is how many dogs can you apply a system to, and do you become self-aware of how to pivot and change certain approaches within while simultaneously staying within the principles and guidelines of that system.
Here's a simple example. If you were to look at those guidelines as a list of things that I will not do, like I'm unwilling to do XYZ to achieve an outcome. The easiest example would be, let's say, you know, an R+ trainer who refuses to use, an aversive with a dog, but this dog isn't particularly food motivated. Mm-hmm. Well, they have systems in place for that. They'll try different treats. They'll try different times of day. They'll try less distracting environments. They'll try a toy. They'll try all these different things. And so that's the idea there of getting comfortable being a little creative while sticking to the rules at the exact same time, right? So it's kind of a not to do list.
Yeah, that's a good point, a not to do list. Now, when we kind of break down common dog training systems, we're going to see a lot of times everyone claims like, oh, I have this method and that method and this special method and this special technique. Guys, if you guys have been doing this long enough, no one has that many original ideas. Right? Like a lot of these techniques have existed for at least 100 years, probably around the behavioral science, maybe not 100 yet, maybe like 80, 90 years, right? But here's the thing, is what makes things innovative is sometimes the order we put things in, and sometimes it's it is those guidelines and those principles that makes things innovative. And so we're going to kind of talk about what we consider to be the three main systems that currently exist in dog training. There are going to be a couple nuanced systems, right, that you guys could argue, but these are just the three main ones, so bear with us. Okay, so number one, the primary use of motivators to shape and reward desired behaviors, right? So kind of the R+ approach. I learned so many things from R+, but remember, every system has certain trade-offs that go within them. So if I'm primarily using motivators to shape and reward desired behaviors, and I'm avoiding to use punishment because ultimately my belief is going to be dogs will perform better if they are uninhibited to make choices and explore options, right? So this means we're not going to put punishers on the dog. We're not going to put a lot of pressure or negative reinforcement on the dog. We want the dog to explore and make choices. And that is the ethos of that system, right? Which sounds really, really great. And it comes in really, really handy. The second one that we use is people who shape with negative reinforcement, right? Now, shaping with negative reinforcement versus shaping with positive reinforcement, we understand that in negative reinforcement, there will be a little bit more of an inhibitory response, meaning when I use negative reinforcement, I am applying pressure onto a dog to create psychological pressure that gets them to comply or make a choice, right? So whether I'm using a pinch collar, an e-collar, a slip lead, even a haltie, right? We're using forms of negative reinforcement to shape desired behaviors. Now, depending on the trainer, they will reward with motivators once the dog has done the right thing. And then they will punish for lack of compliance once they feel the dog has understood, right? So they're using three different quadrants in this particular style of training, okay? And then the last one, which tends to be the most common blend, and I would say it's a high majority of high-level sport trainers, higher-level balance trainers, they tend to do a blend of both shaping with motivators, right? So I will teach a dog things with food and shape positions and reinforce positions, develop the desire to want to do the things that I want them to do. Then what we'll do is we will go ahead and teach a secondary form of prompts, right? Or like a tactile prompt. So maybe I might use leash pressure. I might use pinch collar pressure. I might use e-collar pressure. But the idea is I'm developing a physical form of prompting the same behaviors I developed with food. And because my dog already understands it with food, your dog's going to have a lot easier time learning the tactile prompts. Now, what I also have to do is I have to do a lot of proofing, right? So we have to do a lot of proofing around distractions. We use a lot of positive reinforcement when the dog is nailing it, right? And then we also use a lot of negative reinforcement to help create stability in that dog's, you know, patience or impulse control work, okay? And then all the way at the very, very end, if there are any undesired behaviors that we would like to diminish or get rid of, then we use positive punishment. So this is, there's actually a mixture of all four quadrants in this blend, right? And I think that this blend is kind of, this is my opinion. I want to know what you think, Mariano. I think this blend is actually what balanced dog training has turned into, right? And there's a lot of steps, and for people to do them completely and well, they have to take time with their dogs. But I think this is ultimately the goal that a lot of balanced dog trainers have.
Yeah, so that's an important distinction to make. I don't think it's what balanced dog training has turned into. I think it's what balanced dog training was supposed to be.
I think that
in the pursuit of simplifying and packaging, from a marketing perspective, a lot of people have eliminated pieces of this to make their process more streamlined, I guess you could say. Uh-huh. That doesn't necessarily make it efficient to the dog, but it makes it efficient from an online course's perspective. It's just less stuff to try to manage, right?
Yeah.
Now, I to get back to the concept of a training system, right? A series of actionable steps. I agree it's a blend, but I look at it less as a blend, because a blend kind of means just, and mm-hmm. I look at it more as like a series of steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's an important, way to think about it, at least in my mind, because steps come in order.
It gives chronology, yeah. Chronology.
Right, exactly. There's 1, 2, 3. And for all of those trainers out there listening right now, you guys, when you've trained with dogs, if you're one of those that works with the blend, you guys have all done exactly this. And we have too. Like, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've trained a dog starting with, you know, with food rewards or toy rewards, just, you know, positive reinforcement methods, and then moved into negative reinforcement and so on. You've done that before. And you've also trained dogs starting the other way around. And in both cases, or at least the idea is, in both cases, you've had reasoning. You've had, like, a way that you can logically explain, here's why I'm starting this dog with food, but this other dog with, like, leash pressure. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Usually it has to do with the temperament of the dog or, you know, or food motivation or whatever the case, right? And that thought process is how the creation of a system works. I'm going to get from A to Z, and I'm going to do it in this order for this reason. And so looking at it as a series of steps, I understand the steps change. I get that. You know, we all have been there, depending on the dog. But that's the important piece in my mind is going from A to B to C, or, you know, A to C to B, and being able to articulate as to why. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of talk about why it's important to understand systems. Now, you know, I know I just said that it's important to kind of look at it as a series of steps, right? But when I look at a system, I realize I'm a nerd, but when I look at a system, I look at a system as a unit of measurement. And a similar unit of measurement would be another system. And then I think, what is the smaller unit of measurement? It's, you know, processes within the system, right? And I think that where people get confused is they have a hard time delineating. If I do something a little different, like if I'm an R plus trainer who works with food, but I needed a toy today, is this a variation? Is this a process within my system? Or am I working in a totally different system? And people have a hard time deciding, like, is this a new category or a deviation within the category? So being able to look at one cohesive system is being able to decide this is all one complete category. Now, there's obviously many ways to skin a cat, even within one training system. But that way of thinking is what can save you a lot of headache when you're working with a dog, because a lot of dog trainers out there in the land of YouTube, they look for, you know, solutions to simple problems, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't knock them, or even do things like, you know, this dog trainer I know online, I really respect their work. I paid for an hour of their time and did a consult, right? Like, there's lots of things that people do like that, which I get. You're seeking information from other trainers, and you should do that. But you have to know how to categorize that information that they gave to you, right? And so when you're understanding, like, what is a training system, look at it that way. Does this fit within what I'm working on, or does it not, right? And if it does, then you start playing the A to Z game again. Okay, well, if I'm going to do this thing that they recommended that's kind of different from what I normally do, I wouldn't just kind of plop that right in there in a training system. Right. I would probably try to, it may not fit if I do everything my way and then boom.
Yep.
But is there a way that I can look at that goal that I'm going to try, that new thing, and maybe take a few steps backwards and try to meld the two and kind of make it happen?
Yep.
So that kind of stuff is where you might want to start planning when you're seeking advice from other trainers. And that's why I think it's important to understand, like, how systems work together, how processes all work together.
Right. Definitely. And I remember one thing I used to do to your point is I used to steal the parts that I either understood or liked from other systems, and I would try to bring them into my system. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of like with a puzzle, it's like you put a piece in, like, it looks like it kind of fits, it fits. And then there are some pieces that just didn't fit at all with the system that I started with, right? Because a lot of these systems have foundational stuff, right? Like, the way you start the system is intentional, because it's going to affect the outcome in the middle of the system and in the middle of the process and towards the end of the process, right? So I remember I would, you know, anytime I learned something online that I really, really liked, I would try to put it within the system. And sometimes it worked, but sometimes I would spend 3 days trying to get a result, but I realized it just was incongruent with the rest of the stuff I was doing with the dog. And so I ended up kind of wasting 2 to 3 days of practice teaching the dog something that might look cool or might be fun for the owner, but it just still wasn't reliable, because it wasn't making sense to the dog. The dog was like, where did this come from? You know, like, I understand it now, but where did it come from? You know, and it kind of even generated like a different response out of the dog. So,
well, 100%. And when you, so when you do, let's say, like, a call with a trainer and you get advice from stuff like that, right? Or watch a video or whatever, because that's when, you know, when somebody will kind of try new things.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you guys who have done a call with a trainer, they give you this advice, you try it, and then you have this experience that you just said, right? It kind of didn't really work the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
What's the very next thing you do? Typically, you schedule a follow-up call. And what's the advice they give you? They tell you about the backward steps to make it fit, right? Like, they basically teach you how to apply it within your system. You know, they'll go, well, what did you do? What did you do before that? Oh, okay, so, you know, what I would probably do is blah, 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 blah. And then they go into the process of, like, melding, right? Yeah. And so it's the kind of thing that we already do, right? It's just there's lots of, like, Brent and I, when we discuss these topics, there's lots of times when we come to this realization where it's like trainers are already doing it, and yet there's very few trainers out there who seem to be able to put, like, conscious thought into what they're doing and put words to it. And the words are just, you know, I have this new process. I have a process that could possibly be adapted but needs to be adapted. So now I go through the process of adapting, right? And that's where the advice kind of comes in.
Yeah, definitely. Let's take a quick little commercial break, and then we'll go ahead and come back and finish out this podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world, ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com. or visit our Instagram page at Dog Trainers Podcast. Thank you, guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, welcome back, and thank you again for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez and Brent Labrada here. This is Season 3, Episode 4, and before we went on break, we were just talking about why it's important to understand training systems as well as what those systems are. So we want to dive right back in with discussing how you can learn and get better and practice the system that you're working on. So let's dive right in.
Yeah. So I think one of the main ones is, you guys hear us preach this all the time. Like, if you're studying a system, you need to have very clear guidelines. And it's so easy for us to, like, want to drift to a new video or a new trainer or a new book or a new this. And it's a concept that was introduced to us, known as seminaritis, right? It's back in the day, people would go to seminar after seminar after seminar. And I think people still do that, right? I've seen the same people at five different seminars. We go for research purposes and for network purposes, but these people are trying to build their practice. And seminaritis is ultimately, like, how one can confuse themselves in and kind of put too much information in their head, and therefore eventually kind of have analysis by paralysis because they know too many things that are true at the same time, right? So it's really hard for them to make executive decisions of, like, this needs to happen and this needs to happen, and it's hard to be decisive. So that happens a lot on YouTube and Instagram and social media, and it's just really important to prevent. So what we want to make sure you guys are doing is make sure that you guys are practicing within the system. Make sure you have clear steps. Make sure you guys have a mentor that you can check your work, right? Like, don't forget how important it is to have someone that can check your work. And if you don't have a mentor, record yourself working so that you can check your own work to kind of audit your own performance and the dog's performance, because that's going to really, really help you get better and better every single time.
100%. And the big idea here was something that I feel was very well explained by Dr. Hilliard. And he was saying, you know, I know some of you can't see this, but just imagine, like, two things kind of dovetailing into one, like a pyramid pointing at the top. So he was saying the purpose of a well-thought-out system is all these different processes that you have, because all dog trainers have different processes. Just teaching sit versus down is a very different process, right? So everybody's got a bunch of tools in their kit. But the goal of a thoughtful trainer is to utilize all these different processes in such a way that converge onto each other, that they make contiguous sense toward each other. Because there's lots of dog training out there that all of us have seen. I'm not, like, calling anybody out, but there's lots of dog training out there that all of us have seen that we've all done, if we're being real, where you still got the result that you wanted to get. That doesn't necessarily mean that we didn't do something that we just didn't need to do. Right. Mm-hmm. This isn't even like a moral thing. It's not like you were too hard on this dog, because we don't know. It could have been straight up, you know, R plus. But like, the morality of it aside, it just wasn't necessary. It was just a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Right. So the goal of a good system is to find the time wasters and mitigate them or eliminate them, right? And everything that's left over should be working in conjunction of the next thing.
Right, yeah. Yeah, get out. Trim the fat.
Trim the fat, exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I was actually having an interview with a dog trainer yesterday, and I asked him, I said, what's your weakness? And he goes, organization. And I go, with the dogs or with people? And he goes, both. And I was like, well, what does that look like? What does disorganization mean? And pretty much what he's describing is he doesn't have a clear path and a clear system on how to mm-hmm. teach. Now, obviously, it's like you can go in with a plan. I'm going to do it A, B, C, and D, right? But then you might have to go A, C, B, D, E. You know, like you might have mm-hmm. to switch a couple steps depending on the person.
Totally.
But yeah, and I saw that was something that when I was working with him and talking him through kind of his issues, that was one thing that I actually realized is really common amongst a lot of newer trainers is I don't have a clear A, B, C, D, E. I just kind of go with the flow. I go with what the dog throws at me. And it's really important to see how we can get dogs to conform to a system and cooperate with that system and become better for it, right? So, it's for that reason, it's either like design a system and stick to it or find a mentor that can teach you a system and stick to it. And practice, you know? You got to just 100%. Put in the reps.
Practice being the key word there because, again, you'll find variations of a system,
yep.
right? Even little things. I mean, it depends on how nuanced with it you want to get. But I've met trainers that'll do leash pressure with a dog, but not with a prong collar. Like, you know, there's right. so many little variations to things that you're not really going to learn. And, you know, I don't know if this is an important point to bring up, so bear with me, but you may not also be able to to understand it without necessarily judging it right away if you haven't worked on it a bit yourself. And I don't want to sound like this isn't like some preachy thing. It's just I've seen lots of training footage online, like nothing insane. We've all seen like insane craziness, but you know, I've seen training footage online when I was younger that I'm like, well, that's dumb. Why would you do it that way? Just do it this way, right? Mm-hmm. Just do things the way I do it. Duh. But the more practice you get, the more you're like, even if I wouldn't do it that way, I see where you're trying to go with it, and there's a bit more empathy there. And it's not even like I'm suggesting we just need to be more empathetic online. It's more, how many times have you seen something that you were able to articulate in your mind? Like, I wouldn't have done it that way, but I get why you're doing it. And I get, like, this is why you're doing it. Like, you'll kind of logically play it out in your mind. Here's why you're doing it. Here's what you're thinking is going to happen.
Yeah.
And when you're having that dialogue internally, you start to learn different ins and outs of your own system of like, well, I guess they have a point here, you know, but mm-hmm. maybe not there.
Right.
And so it's more about really being able to play with the thoughts and play with the order that you dissect in your own head by weighing it against things that you see. But you're not going to be able to do that with clear eyes if you like prejudge it. Like, no, this was just dumb and I would do nothing like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why you got to watch people who know what they're doing. Because it is unless you know the full context, what happens before, what happens after, it's really easy to look at a moment in time and be like, that's dumb. Why would you do that? You know
exactly.
What I mean? So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, this was our episode on systems. I hope it was a little food for thought for some of you guys, right? Just always remember there's no original systems. There's different configurations of steps in dog training. Even when you go into other disciplines, like if we go into like the dog psychology world, even though they may not be using a lot of tools or they may not be using a lot of, you know, motivators in regards to food, they still fall into one of these three systems that we discussed today, right? So I guess the big takeaway from today is find a system, stick to the system, practice that system, audit yourself within that system, and get to learn the ins and outs and get to learn the little nuances where you pivot, where you try something a little different. And once you've figured out that system so well, then you can go ahead and try and explore other systems and try to have an open mind. Don't judge people if you don't understand their system. Have them teach you or explain to you why they're doing something and really try to understand which one of these three systems that we broke down are you coming from, right? Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. This was season 3, episode 4. If you guys are listening to us on some of the podcast platforms, make sure that you like or subscribe to us. If you guys leave comments, that allows us to show up better in natural search results. So that's very, very helpful if you guys can do that. All right. If you guys want to follow us on social media, go ahead and follow us on TikTok and Instagram at Dog Trainers Podcast. And check us out on our website, www.dogtrainerspodcast.com. We got some upcoming events happening this year. We'd love to have you guys join us. All right. My name is Brent Labrada. That guy's Mariano Alvarez. And we'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.